evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic tonight is activism or clicktivism, how technology is transforming social engagement. The world these days is full of easy ways to get involved with causes and social movements, from posting a status on Facebook to tweeting a pithy call to action to signing an online petition or making a donation via smartphone. Nonprofits are rushing to take advantage of these web and mobile tools as a way of reaching potential new supporters and raising much-needed funds. The Bay Area is the birthplace of many of these innovative approaches to social engagement, which were developed by people who are savvy about technology and passionate about making a difference. But along with the excitement about the growth of online activism, there is also skepticism as new questions emerge about the efficacy of the web and mobile campaigns. Does online engagement lead to the boots on the ground, real-world organizing required to tackle deeply rooted issues? Are these online tools creating a click-to-change mentality or clicktivism that make people believe that changing the world is as easy as ordering a book on Amazon? And if a nonprofit group uses these new methods, can it really build lasting networks of supporters who are committed to its mission? Joining me to answer these questions and more are in studio Dave Boyce, co-founder of and CEO of Fundly.com. And that is Fundly is the world's number one crowdfunding platform for social good. Fundly allows anyone to create and launch a social fundraising campaign and do it in as little as 5 minutes. And since starting in 2009, Fundly has enabled more than 25,000 nonprofits, advocacy and political campaigns, volunteer organizations, and individual fundraising campaigns to raise more than $290 million for their causes. So welcome, Dave.
Thank you very much for having me.
And by phone, we have Brianna Cato-Cotter, Communications Director for Change.org. And Brianna is the Director of the Global Communications at Change.org, the fastest growing social action platform. And Brianna has over a decade of experience developing creative, effective communication strategies to help advance social change with a focus on challenging corporate policies. Welcome, Brianna.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited about this conversation.
Awesome. And last but not least, we have Nell Greenberg, who's the Communications Director for Rainforest Action Network. And Nell has been a campaign communications and online engagement strategist for the past decade. And she has experience with designing communications media and marketing strategies for efforts that include passing sweatshop labor ordinances in San Francisco and Portland and convincing the EPA to end mountaintop removal coal mining. Welcome, Nell.
Thank you.
So that's our panel, and we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, and we'll start opening up the lines in about 20 minutes. So great panel, great topic. Let me start out with Nell. You are, you know, with the Rainforest Action Network, and you've also been around for over, which has been around for over 20 years, but you've also been an organizer for over 10 years. So tell me, how would you define activism and how its definition has changed or not changed over the last decade?
Oh, that's a great and big question. So to be clear, I've been doing communications and creative communications and campaigning for 10 years. So there's probably a lot of other people who could speak to organizing and activism. But I think, fundamentally what most anybody who's working on activism today and in the last, decade and more would say is that it's about inspiring people to get involved and make change and to push for a culture that reflects whatever the values are for the change you're trying to see. And I think that what has changed over the last many years and the subject of this conversation is that the tools have changed, but the idea of inspiring ever more people to get involved and take action and really rethink what civic engagement looks like beyond the ballot box has been a conversation for a very long time. And right now, the biggest medium that everyone's talking about is what that looks like online. But I think the fundamental question is still the same, which is how do you actually get people involved and take meaningful action to change the world.
Okay. And do you, you recently went to a conference. So what's the current thinking in nonprofit, the nonprofit world, in terms of the role of social and digital media for fundraising and activism?
I had the privilege to go to Cortez Island, which is a beautiful place, and to be at a conversation called Web of Change. And it brought together many of the sort of leading edge thinkers about what online engagement really looks like and how do you use it. And I think, you know, the leading sort of conversations right now are exactly, you know, the title of your conversation, which is activism or clicktivism. How do we really look at the opportunity that online engagement provides and make sure that we're not just measuring activities like how many retweets did I get, how many clicks did I get, how many likes did I get, how many signatures did I get on a petition, and really thinking about how to tie that metric into actual impact on the ground. So that's been a very big conversation and sort of the leading edge, I think, of what a lot of people are thinking about now that, you know, everyone's experimented enough with online tools to sort of see what they're good for and what they're not, and really thinking about how do we tie all of the tactics online to thinking about goals and actually impact on the ground and real change on the ground. So that's a big piece of the conversation.
Let me move on, and thank you very much for that great introduction. Let me bring in Dave Boyce. So you... Fundly.com, it's about fundraising, and so it seems like the metrics would be really clear in terms of really getting funds for these nonprofits or whatever political, you know, to have be able to do what they want to do. Would that be correct?
That is correct, and mm-hmm. I actually think that the term, I hate the term clicktivism.
Okay, why?
I think it's disparaging, and I think that everyone has something to give. I actually think it's on us, the technology providers and the nonprofits, to define how you progress from, hey, I can retweet something, to, hey, I'm happy to post something, to, hey, I'm happy to sign something, to, I'm willing to donate something, either time or money, to, I'm willing to recruit other people to donate something. And to say that one piece of that equation isn't worth very much, is to say that, is to downplay the beginning of the journey. So we do measure dollars raised, and as you said, we've helped nonprofit causes raise $290 million. But the great thing is that 88% of those people had never given to that cause before, and many of those people got involved first by just following a campaign or by just retweeting. And so providing that whole kind of spectrum of engagement from, hey, I'd like to follow it so I can get some updates and see what this cause is all about, all the way through to I'm willing to give and then I'm willing to fundraise, is really kind of what the Fundly platform is all about.
So it's interesting because I have read that around only when nonprofits do use the web for fundraising, that they get, it's only like 3 or 4% of the fundraising comes from donations given online. Yet Fundly seems to really do a fantastic job at getting, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. What do you think the difference is? Or is there a difference?
There is a big difference. What we've tried to do is take a Silicon Valley Web 2.0 approach to online fundraising, which means it is not a static, two-dimensional, one-and-done donation form, per se, where you come in and spend X number of minutes filling out all sorts of fields, and then you hit contribute, and that's the last you hear from that organization until they need money again. We try to create an experience that's about engagement. And when I hit a Fundly form, it feels like, welcome to the family. There's other people here. You know some of them. There's conversation here. There's information here. There's a target, and there's a time frame, and we're working together, and many hands make light work, and would you like to be part of us? You can be part of us by following or by joining the conversation or by donating, whatever. But as soon as you join this campaign, now you're on the receiving end of updates And as the campaign unfolds, you're going to learn about the momentum that's building. If one of your friends joins, we're going to let you know that one of your friends joined. If somebody that you recruited does something, we're going to let you know about that. And you feel it. It's much more of an experience than just a one-and-done donation, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And because of that, people actually like getting involved in a Fundly campaign. Even if a friend recruits you in for something that you may not have been aware of in the past, it's a fun enough experience. Hey, here's 10 bucks. My friend cares about it. Here's 10 bucks. I might learn something in the, you know, in the process.
And do you worry about inundating people that really just wanted to, you know, slip the envelope under the door?
No. I should worry about it. That'll be a great problem to have. We have all sorts of settings. If you really don't want to get those updates, then you go in and you just turn them off. But so far, our experience has been people didn't give you money because they hate their money. It's not like, boy, I wish I had less money, and man, if you could take this off my hands, you'd be doing me a big favor. No, people are actually getting involved because they want to belong to something that's bigger than them. They want to feel like they're connected to the world outside of their cubicle or their desk or just their daily routine. So they actually join because they want those updates. And a daily update on how the campaign's doing for something that you contributed to, our experience is nobody turns those off. They like the excitement and the energy of how a campaign builds.
And do you find that people, once they've caught the Fundly fever, I mean, that they want to be involved in other campaigns, or is it kind of a one-off sort of... they're brought for this one particular person or nonprofit or whatnot?
Well, you know, that is our strategy, and we have definitely found that. I would change one word. Primary in the way we go to market is we have our nonprofit brand and cause front and center. So you catch the Habitat for Humanity fever, or you catch the Teach for America fever, or catch the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals fever. Now, of course, it's a Powered by Fundly campaign. We want you primarily to be excited about Children's Miracle Network Hospitals and all the good that's happening for the kids. But the next time you see a Fundly campaign come through for Save the Sea Turtles or whatever, we'd like you to have that thought in mind. Wow, when I did the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals thing, it was so fun. I don't know much about sea turtles, but my friend cares about it. What the heck? Here's $10. Maybe I'll learn something.
Okay. Let me pull in Brianna of change.org. It's interesting because, you know, we talked about the different ways that, you know, I think that people can get involved as social activists, and the matrix is what Nell talked about. Now, clearly with when it comes to fundraising, as what happens with Fundly.com, it's more straightforward. But when it comes to change, it's a little grayer. So how what is your metrics, and how with change.org do you define success in terms of a campaign?
Great question. So just to give a little perspective on what's happening in the change.org universe right now, is we just hit 20 million active users. So those are 20 million
wow.
people coming to the site from all over the world, 175 countries, to make a difference. And the way that change.org works is that anybody anywhere can go and for free start a petition about anything that they care about, and then send it to their networks and also tap into the change.org network of users. And last month alone, 40,000 people started petitions on change.org, and that's just amazing. And those range from the super local, you know, somebody that's trying to change a policy at their local school board or trying to get a book into their library, to the really big, to, you know, a nanny who wanted to stop Bank of America's $5 debit fee back in the fall, and everywhere in between. And so, you know, the way that we measure metrics is by winning. and one of the arguments that about activism that people make all the time is, oh, but it's so easy. And it shouldn't be so easy. And I mean, that to me is just kind of a crazy way of thinking. It's like we shouldn't be measuring what works in activism basis, what's easy and what's really difficult. It should be what's working. And we're seeing over and over and over again that people are going online, starting petitions, pushing them out over social media, oftentimes getting into traditional media, catching the attention of the decision makers in charge, and winning. again and again and again and again. And sometimes those, sometimes it starts as a petition and it turns into all sorts of offline actions. And sometimes it starts and ends at a petition. And it really depends on the issue. But I mean, it's really a matter of how can you make change about something you care about? And I think that all of us on this panel and probably most of the people listening right now want to know that they can make a difference and that if they see something around them, that they have the tools to change it if it's wrong. And I think that that's like the beauty of online activism is that, you know, before the kind of power of what was being able to be addressed was kind of mediated between civil society or like nonprofit organizations taking up a cause or government deciding that something was important or citizens going out and fighting for something. But now every single person that has access to a computer has the ability to make a difference about something that they see that's wrong around them. And I mean, we're seeing hundreds and thousands of victories every single week on, or every single month on the site. And it's just remarkable.
Are there any places where it hasn't worked? I mean, there must be.
Yeah, I mean, there's of the, you know, so on average, 15,000 people are starting petitions on the site. And I would say that, you know, honestly, a lot of them are not successful. But the ones that we see that are not, the ones that are successful tend to have a couple elements in common. Number one, they're personally compelling. Like there's a person at the heart of the situation that started the petition because something has gone wrong. Whether or not a recent example is a woman whose friend is dying of stage 4 breast cancer and her house is being foreclosed upon by Wells Fargo. And the friend has started a petition to allow the woman to get a stop on her foreclosure so that she can die in her house. And so there's that kind of human element that anybody can relate to. Anybody seeing the situation would say, oh, God, that's terrible. So number one, like kind of human core to the story. Number two is that it's kind of broadly appealing, which is related to that. Number three is that there's a clear person that can make the decision about what is happening. So in this case, it's the, you know, the local Wells Fargo office has a decision about whether or not they can let this woman, be forced out of her house and die on the streets, or they can have the decision to help her go through an anti-foreclosure process and redo her loan, modify her loan, et cetera. The petitions that we find on the sites that are not as successful are the ones that tend to be kind of broad sweeping problems like President Obama and world hunger. That is like a much more complicated issue. And President Obama, as much as I'm sure he would love to end world hunger, is maybe not the most specific target to go after if you're going that. So, you know, I think, and we find more and more on the site that the most successful petitions have a kind of non-traditional decision maker. You know, in this country, 90% of online petitions are directed towards a small handful of people. They're directed at Congress, the Senate, and the President, whereas 90% of elected officials in this country are not the President, Congress, or the Senate. They are local school board leaders. They're city council members. They are the, you know, CEOs of companies. And we find that when people start a petition around an issue that matters to them in a deep personal way, that they can have real impact around it if they find the kind of right and specific person that can address that problem.
So are there a certain number of, you know, of signatures that are needed to impact this kind of change with these more local leaders? I mean, is it similar as if someone went around and got signatures on the street?
It really depends. Like on big campaigns, like going against Bank of America for the debit fees or kind of at that level, it generally is helpful to have hundreds of thousands of signatures. One of the most popular petitions that we've ever had on change.org was started by Trayvon Martin's parents. And they managed to get 2.5 million signatures on their petition to get George Zimmerman arrested. And, you know, so having a lot of signatures is definitely very helpful. However, we find that time and time again, it really, you can win a petition with 10 signatures, with 100 signatures, as long as you're really tapping in to a real community issue and one that, and you're targeting the right people. For example, in Richmond, Virginia right now, a petition that just got started a couple days ago, a bunch of school children in a really low-income, predominantly community of color, they were sending all of the kindergartners to a school that was built right next to a toxic waste dump. And the school had been shut down for many years, and they had made a new decision to just send all these kindergartners to the school. And the parents started a petition, or the aunt of one of the kindergartners that was going to be forced to go to the school started a petition on the site, I think, late last week. And it's gained 20,000 signatures. All of the emails are going directly to the school board members. They're having a meeting tonight at the Richmond School Board District. And there was a local news article in the local Richmond, Virginia newspaper that said that two of the servers had been broken of school board members. And they were just overwhelmed by the response of community members and people all over the country that care about these kids, and they hadn't even had this as an agenda item on their school board meeting, but it forced it onto the agenda and something that they are going to, it's now the number one priority for what they do and how they provide a safe and healthy school environment to these kids. So that's it really fantastic. Can be anywhere from, you know, 5 signatures to 2.5 million. It really just depends on mobilizing people to help you
in your cause. So then it sounds like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Nell, when you were at this meeting, is basically the most powerful activism that takes place, is it really from the ground up as opposed to, you know, nonprofits coming in? Or is it kind of, as Brianna was saying, just really, you know, those three things, you know, personally compelling, a person, that you know, someone that can make a decision. Is there any when you look out there at the things that are successful in terms of using this tool?
Well, I think I would actually go back to something that Dave said, which I think is kind of key to a lot of this, which is that it's all about making the barrier to entry easy, mm-hmm. and making it something where everybody can feel powerful. And then it's about bringing people in and giving them more and more steps to get involved. So maybe you start by signing a petition, you know, and sometimes maybe it does end there. And sometimes maybe after you sign a petition, you then send it to a number of your friends. And after you send it to a number of your friends, you then start, you know, you write a blog about it. And then after you write a blog about it, maybe you have a house party about it. So the idea is that we are giving people a ladder of engagement in order to get involved at ever deeper levels, in order to be empowered to take action to make change. And I think that what Brianna said has always been true about good campaigns, which is that they need to be compelling. They need to be speaking to, you know, a undercurrent that's happening in your community or in the country so that it feels relevant. And it also has to have a logic to it so that whoever the decision maker is that you're targeting actually can make the change that you want to see, and it feels possible that change will happen. So I think the stuff that, you know, that everybody I see, whether you're, you know, a big list group or a small community activist group or an Occupy group that is, you know, being effective, is thinking about how to bring people in ever sort of more escalating ask. So you bring people in small, and then you ask them for more and more, and you're bringing them in with stuff that's relevant, that's evocative, and that feels like it really will have a change. So that, you know, there's an action logic to it, is what we would call it. And I think that campaigns have always been built around that, whether they're, you know, good nonprofit campaigns or whether they're, you know, coming from some other sort of corporate entity. So I think what's become really beautiful to look at is this idea of opening up the avenues for who can make change and how, so that it's not just people who are working at nonprofits, but it's people who anybody, you know, as Brianna said, anybody anywhere can. And the, you know, the big part of the conversation that you know, I find really interesting is, when do we need breadth in our campaigns and when do we need depth? When do we need a large number of people to take action and sign and have millions of people on a signature? Or, you know, when do we need a big list organization to get involved? And when is it actually more powerful to have a community group take something on that's much more relevant to their communities? And how do we ensure that big list groups and community groups and nonprofits are actually all lifting each other up and using all of their tools to support each other? It's not about being better than the other. It's about how does success beget success, you know?
Let's come back to that point. But if you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing how technology is transforming social engagement and activism. My guests are Dave Boyce, co-founder and CEO of Fundly.com, Brianna Kidd-O'Cotter, communications director for change.org, and Nell Greenberg, communications director for the Rainforest Action Network. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. How have you been involved, or are you someone that is what our guests do not like hearing? I mean, the term. Are you a clicktivist or a slacktivist? Would you consider that, or do you think that if you, as being someone who's on that ladder of engagement, who maybe at one point tweeted something or clicked yes that you believe in something, and now you feel like now you're more engaged in whatever your cause was. We'd like to hear from you. To join our conversation, the number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I do want to ask about this issue of, you know, bringing people in. Are there people that, do you find that yet there are people out there who, we'll call them the clickvists or slacktivists, who started on that ladder of engagement, but didn't see the change that they're interested in, so have just lost interest? Do you feel like there's a growing number of people like that, Dave?
It certainly happens. We cast a wide, wide net, as Nell was saying. You know, there's certain times when you want to cast a wide net. And on the Fundly platform, we do our very best to make sure that everyone who touches a campaign on Fundly connects their Facebook social network. They do what's called a Facebook Connect. So now I can cast the net even wider, because any actions that they take, even if it's just following or essentially posting, are going to get shared with 130 friends. Will all of those 130 friends be interested? No. Will some of them visit? Yes. Will some of them stick around and do more? Yes. Will others, you know, be kind of one and done? Yes. It's fine, because what we found is that there are a lot of people who are on the sidelines because it's not easy. And if I can make it easy for you to give, so the vision for Fundly is a world where more people give more of themselves, more money, more time, whatever it is that they have to give, more people come off the sidelines and give more. Well, what would compel you to give more if it were compelling and easy? And if we can make it easy even to do a click, then we'll get a lot of people in. Not all of them will go all the way down the ladder, but that's fine. Others will go all the way down and will turn into online advocates, and that's great too.
Okay. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW and on the web at klw.org. And tonight we're discussing how technology is transforming social engagement and activism. Coincidentally, we are also in the final days of our fall fund drive here at KLW. So I'm going to stop for a moment and let our engineer, Eric Wayne, tell you a little bit more about that.
My name is Jim Stockton. I'm from Berkeley, California.
Hi, I'm Manuel Martinez. Currently, I live in Montclair.
My name is Ilsa Bartlett. I live in Berkeley. I am a longstanding KALW listener. I have a button on my car radio.
For three reasons, and they're all intertwined.
The diversity.
DJs.
The world music.
I like the science.
Creative, intelligent, thoughtful stuff is scarce these days.
Whatever is on is going to be better than what's on any of the other stations.
Local public radio. KALW 91.7 San Francisco.
And you can join your local public radio right now by calling 1-800-525-9917. This day has been very good. It's shaping up. It could be one of the best pledge drives days that we've had. If you want to make it that way, that could be you. It could be you doing that, pushing us over the edge. We're just about three quarters of the way to our goal of 325,000, and this will be our last drive all the way until May. So call now, 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. Either way is a great way to support your local public radio. 1-800-525-9917 on kalw.org. You can also see some of the thank you gifts that we have for you that have been graciously donated by many people who support your local public radio. 1-800-525-9917 or kalw.org. And now we go back to City Visions.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, again, this is City Visions, and tonight we're discussing how technology is transforming social engagement and activism. My guests are Dave Boyce, co-founder and CEO of Fundly.com, Brianna Cato Cotter, Communications Director for Change.org, and Nell Greenberg, Communications Director for the Rainforest Action Network. We want to hear from you. We want to know what your thoughts are in terms of activism, online activism, and how you, if you find that it's kind of getting a little bit too much for you to see constant things on your Facebook about different causes, or if you think it's great and you wish people would bring it on more, we want to hear from you. Again, the number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to go to our first caller for the evening. We have Lisa from Oakland. Good evening, Lisa.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have a question. It's more geared towards, well, a community radio station similar to KLW.
Okay.
That happens to be KPFM. But we have we obviously have an online presence. Everything is archived. We have connection to Facebook. But it's not a specific campaign, and there's not an actual way listeners can get involved except for through listening. So I'm wondering how you make suggestions for organizations like that. For instance, I work at the Women's Magazine. We have set up a blog to try to be interactive. But other than that, I'm not really sure how. Maybe you could give us some suggestions that would be beneficial for everybody.
Has your efforts been just kind of throw it out there and see what happens, Lisa?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of just put out the blog, but we haven't really gotten a lot of responses. And, you know, the other problem is that when you're on a community radio, the people who are listening are a small group. It's hard to reach out to a broader group and you're also volunteers, most of the people, so you don't really have someone who you can hire to go out and, you know, spread the word all over the Internet. So it needs to be something that's fairly easy to do, but at the same time, you know, well, what would be most effective?
Sure. Let me throw this out to Dave Boyce from Fundly.com. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, Lisa, that we hear this quite a bit. I can be really specific. And, of course, everything's always nuanced, and your situation may be, may have certain nuances, but you absolutely have to have a campaign with a specific objective and a specific goal. It is very hard for people to get their head around just contributing to the greater good. It is very easy for people to get their head around, if we make it to $1,000, then we will be able to get our new console for our studio, or then we will be able to secure our rent for the rest of the year, or then we will be able to, whatever the thing is that you're trying to do. So I would suggest picking something very small, $100, $500, $1,000, no bigger than that, and just trying it and saying, hey, we need the following thing. If we can get $500 by X date, we will be able to get it. Now it's very specific. Now I know that my $20 or my $50 is going to get something that I care about, and I may care about that enough. In fact, if you say that this thing is it is going away if we can't get that, or we're not going to have the opportunity to have this particular show or whatever it is, people can rally around something that they really care about, but you have to be specific about it and then see if they'll share with their friends and then just track the progress towards a goal. Even if it's a $100 goal, everyone likes to be part of a winning team. Hey, we just got $100. You know, yay us, victory. Share out the victory message. And the next time you come out to your community, they'll be excited to rally again.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay.
You know, but Lisa's question sort of brings up a good point, and I guess I would like to ask Brianna, like, in terms of what goes behind your scenes. Like, I'm sure, you know, there's what the user sees, and then there's probably, you know, the behind-the-scenes part of your model that makes it really successful, makes it successful for people. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I answer that question, I actually wanted to say one thing to Lisa, because Change.org actually started as a blogging, or didn't start exactly, but it was a blogging platform originally. We're a tech company that was trying to figure out how to connect people and do social good in the world. And we were an active blogging platform where people were writing about things and connecting, and it was exciting, and there was good information being shared. And when we decided to start putting petitions on, we gave our bloggers the ability to post a petition when they wrote about an issue. So if it was like sex trafficking at Hilton hotels, then the person that wrote about that could then start a petition to get hotels to make a policy to stop sex trafficking. And we found that that was wildly successful, and then we wanted everybody to be able to do that and not just our bloggers. And so pretty quickly we kind of moved away from the blogging platform and just opened up this petition tool. So one thing I would say to that is also, I mean, KPFA does fantastic programming around really important issues, and I wonder if there's a way to kind of open up and anybody can start a petition. So, you know, easily any of your reporters or producers, if they're writing about something or a guest is on the show, they could start a Change.org petition in less than 5 minutes, and then have like a way for your listeners to actually engage in the content that they're hearing and take action. So just side note on that. But your question was, is a great what happened
behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the vast majority of petitions that get started on Change.org kind of exist on their own. And people, you know, go and they start a petition and they share it with their friends, they share it on Facebook, they share it to their email contacts, they maybe connect, you know, contact their local media outlets, and we don't even know that it existed. And we only hear about it when they click a victory button on their petition, and then we know that they won. And that's so exciting. And we love getting those emails, and it's really great to see all the victories. However, on a small portion of the petitions that are started on the site, and we have an amazing team of the most all-star campaigners and organizers that go on to Change.org every morning. They wake up and they go and see what petitions have been started. And they are tracking day by day, hour by hour, all the new petitions that are coming onto the site. And at this point, it's usually between 500 and 1,000 new petitions get started every day. So they go on and they see which ones are getting a lot of attention, which ones, some petitions get 10,000 signatures overnight. And so obviously our campaign staff is like, whoa, what's going on here? So they go and look at that. And they also look at the ones that maybe don't have so many signatures but have a really compelling but that seem really interesting, like it's something that's a little, that seems like it's meaningful, or it has a lot of like heart to it. And so they go on and they look through every petition that gets started, and the ones that kind of fit that criteria that we've been talking, that Nell and all of us have been talking about, that are kind of very compelling and are winnable, that have a logic to them, for some of those petitions are team will reach out to the person that started the petition and offer them support.
Okay.
And they'll say, hey, I think that this could be a really big petition. We think that this is something that would resonate with, you know, millions of other change.org users that are outside of your kind of traditional network. And we would love to help you win. And sometimes that means helping them, you know, write a press release and send it out to national press contacts. Sometimes it means helping them, you know, edit an email that can be sent to, you know, 6 million change.org users that also care about environmental issues or whatever it is. And sometimes it can be as simple, like the person's got all that sorted, but they don't, but they've just been, you know, their petition has been very popular and they've targeted the right person. And that decision maker has said that they want to have a meeting with them, but they've never met with the CEO of a major company, so they want to kind of talk.
So you guys you're really like consultants. But I'm curious, do you ever say no? You won't. You just totally on a ground of ethics, don't agree and won't help someone.
Yeah. So again, like we provide the tools and the platform for anybody to start petitions. However, the petitions that we actively work on are ones that have broad appeal.
Okay.
And in the United States, where we have a very politically divisive and nasty conversation going on,
sure.
What that means is that we don't jump into, we're a completely nonpartisan platform. And so, you know, people start petitions on all ranges of the political spectrum, and that's fantastic. And we want to see that debate and that dialogue on the site. However, any petitions that are severely kind of partisan and have a real strong political divide, we wouldn't actively kind of support those petitions. We'd love to see them blow up. We'd love to see them win, but our kind of team is not going to kind of wait in.
Okay, let me go back to Nell. You know, clearly the change.org and Fundly are kind of well-oiled machines, but when you're working for a nonprofit, how do you decide how many resources to put on to an online campaign, or, you know,
Well, I mean, in a way, it's not that different than what Brianna said. I mean, we run corporate campaigns, so campaigns targeting some of the largest corporations in the world to push them to stop cutting down the rainforest and to stem global climate change. And so, you know, we focus on getting Bank of America to stop funding the largest coal companies in the country. We focus on getting massive pulp mills and paper companies in Indonesia to stop cutting down Indonesian rainforest, getting Cargill, which is the largest privately held company in the country, to stop planting palm oil in place of natural rainforest in Indonesia. So a lot of what we focus on is basically thinking about what is the most strategic way to make change on those campaigns. And so for us, you know, we have a broad range of toolbox, you know, of tools in our toolbox, and online tools are one of those tools. And so we've experimented with all sorts of, you know, integrative online and offline marketing campaigns to target CEO of Cargill. We've experimented with, you know, petitions. We've experimented with, you know, all sorts of online organizing tactics, and it really just depends, and even sort of creative tactics like whisper campaigns on LinkedIn to find people who are connected to corporations that we're targeting, or, you know, meme generators where we take a company's advertising campaign and we crowdsource it and get as many people as possible to jam the ad and come up with something that's clever and hard-hitting that we then push out, or we wheat paste around the corporation's headquarters. So, you know, we're using all kinds of creative tools all the time. And for us, it's basically what is going to push a corporate target to do the right thing and stop, you know, cutting down the rainforest for cheap paper or palm oil that we don't need, or, you know, stop a bank from funding the coal companies that are the largest threat to climate change in the country. So,
wow, okay. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing how technology is transforming social engagement and activism. My guests are Dave Boyce, co-founder and CEO of Fundly.com, Brianna Cato Cotter, communications director for Change.org, and Nell Greenberg, communications director for the Rainforest Action Network. We want to hear from you. have you thought about using for your causes, your needs, that one of these, an online presence, having an online activism presence? And if not, why? What stopped you? We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Well, I'm curious, Nell, since it sounds like you have done a lot, but it has been pretty pointed in terms of what you use. How have you found? Do you think that what you originally thought the amazingness, if you will, of the whole online activism would be, have you found that to be true? Or has it been a little bit disappointing, and have you kind of pulled back in terms of where you put your energy?
That's a great question. It just depends campaign by campaign. The most successful stuff that I've seen for an organization that's our size, that doesn't have millions and millions of people on its list, is really, really, really smart, strategic approaches. So, for example, something that's what we're looking for now is more about saturation than it is about one-off. So we're mm-hmm. more interested in making sure that everybody in the Wayzata community in Minneapolis, where the CEO of Cargill lives, sees our message 3 to 5 times through online ads, billboard ads, petitions, calls to the CEO, as opposed to seeing if we can get as many people as possible to do something one time. So we're really looking at how do we maximize our impact by doing much more focused and targeted stuff. And that's one of the beauties, I think, with online engagement, is that it's not just about using a megaphone to reach as many people as possible. It's also about really, really, really smart audience targeting and segmentation. So more than ever before, you can highly target the decision makers that you're trying to reach and the people, the chattering class that's around them and the people that are around them in really sophisticated ways, both with online advertising, with geo-targeting on Facebook and a number of other tools. And it's also cheaper. So for the same $20,000 that it would take to do, a one full-page ad in a mainstream paper in Minneapolis, you can get many, 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 many online ads. You can get local magazine ads, and you can think a lot differently about how to target very select audiences. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about online tools. And the other part is you can start conversations, and you can do organizing in really deep ways with an online community, and that's been beautiful to see. So I think, something that Dave said before that I think it's important to go back to is we want to make it simple for anybody to get involved. At the same time, we're working on some of the hardest issues of our time. We're talking about climate change, corporate control of our democracy, racism, whatever social change issue you're talking about. These are not simple issues. So I think there has to be a reconciliation between wanting to figure out the tangible way to get people involved in a way that can really make change, and also understanding that, a lot of the emails we see these days, it's like, stop the Keystone XL pipeline today, send this email, and that's the language of email blasts. It isn't really true that it's going to be that simple. We're changing the fabric of our culture. So I think it's a both and that's really the place of nuance that we need to think about.
Well, one of the biggest criticisms, obviously, that the campaigns are giving young people a false sense of what it really takes to create change, or if the call to action is just wrong, like the Kony 212, where people thought they could end war, with clicks and maybe Brianna, what do you think about that? How do you address that, those issues?
So I feel like Nell is brilliant as always. I think a really good example to kind of dive into this question is the Keystone Pipeline, where, there was a lot of online mobilization around it. I think that maybe there were some change.org campaigns, I'm not sure, but I definitely saw that there was lots of big environmental groups and other groups were you know, gathering signatures and getting like hundreds of thousands of voters to send emails. And that was great. And it showed that there was broad constituencies across the country that wanted the Keystone Pipeline to not happen. But from my perspective, it was really what made it a national priority and something that Obama had to start thinking about and really dealing with was that when day after day after day after day in front of the White House, there were people taking bold civil disobedience and refusing to leave, being arrested, forcing it into the national conversation. And then, you know, beyond that, there's been lots of deep organizing in communities throughout the route of the pipeline that has been trying to stop it in every way that they can along the way, whether or not that's local legislative battles or local direct actions or mobilizing ranchers to stand up and kind of be somewhat unusual voices in the fight against this, and like really deep organizing. And I just think that that's absolutely true, that, you know, sometimes it is, you can just have a deep action happen that is meaningful and has impact online, and that happens all the time. And it also is true that there are some big fights, as now we're saying, that are about changing kind of the fabric of our culture and our, you know, in this case, our dependency on foreign oil and all of the like incredible impact that kind of terrible extraction has on our environment, on global climate change, that are much deeper than that and need way more than just an email mobilization. The email mobilization is very useful for demonstrating wide popular support, but it takes kind of deep level organizing from all sides. And so I think it's both and. That Nell is talking about.
Okay, here. Okay. Well, let me go back to Nell. I mean, Nell, do you think, I mean, when you went to the conference, for example, I mean, do people talk about giving this whole idea of giving young people a false sense of hope for what it will take to create change? Or is that kind of an old argument and people have sort of gone beyond and they just realize there's a time and there's a place and people are on this, you know, understand what works and what doesn't work, as Dave was saying, you know, with the different levels of involvement?
I mean, I think the language that we use for email blasts is something that we need to, now that we've been using email campaigns for long enough, is something we need to think critically about and how to bring back more nuance into our language there so that we aren't giving the sense that you can click social change in the same way that you could buy a book on Amazon. That said, I have to say, I think young people are far and away doing some of the most hopeful and inspiring things I've ever seen in activism. And I think it's young people, you know, I focus mostly on environmental issues. And so, you know, what I've seen since climate legislation failed is actually young people saying, we're not going to wait any longer. And we're going to use every tool available to us at the local level to make change in every single way we know how, from starting, you know, becoming entrepreneurs, dropping out of college and becoming entrepreneurs, from, you know, starting campaigns with change, whatever it is they can think of, running campaigns on their college campuses. You know, and I would say that's true from undocumented immigrant, you know, dream activists that I've worked with, to Occupy Our Homes activists who are working on fighting foreclosures in their communities. Young people are not sitting around waiting for some magical panacea that's never going to come. They're using every tool they can to make change. And online tools
Lauren,
are just one
to
of them.
Lauren, just jump in there.
Sure.
I could say that the most inspiring things that I see on change.org are started by young people. And I think that it's amazing. And it's young people that like they don't have the right to vote. They have, like, before, they wouldn't have had very many ways to address the wrongs that they're seeing around them. And they're going online, they're going to the streets, they're going to their campuses, whatever it is, and they are starting these amazing petitions. And, like, very recently, like, and we're not even just talking about high school students, and they're running amazing campaigns. There was a 14-year-old ballet dancer in Maine who is fed up with, like, terrible body image promoted by these teen magazines that have all these Photoshop models that give girls an unrealistic sense of what's beautiful. And so she started a petition to get 17, the largest teen magazine in the country, to make a commitment to go Photoshop free. And she, you know, she didn't get that many. She got, I don't know, something like 30,000 signatures, but it became a big story. The editor-in-chief ended up meeting with the girls and then went and made a commitment on the front of their September issue that the from now on, 17 was not going to Photoshop girls. They were going to have a commitment to real girls in their magazines. And it's amazing. And then, but it's not only like teenagers. It's right here in Marin. There is a group of kindergarten to sixth graders who found out they're in a local like environmental club in their elementary school, and they found out that Crayola doesn't recycle markers. And they were upset about that because they love Crayola markers and they wanted to be able to feel good about the environment and using Crayola markers. And so they started a massive petition to get Crayola markers to set up a recycling program to recycle the markers. And Crayola still hasn't budged, though it's been in negotiation with these like kids that don't even have teeth. But one of Crayola's major competitors that produces all the number two pencils that you see and also a lot of markers, they stepped up and they said, you know what, we're going to start that recycling program. And I just think that it's amazing to see how young people are, who are growing up with this technology. It's like
it's just another tool for them that they see, like that they see
using it to have political and consumer power that was just unheard of 10 years ago.
Dave, you had an example too, huh? There was from Funly. What was your
example? Brianna, just riffing off of that, and Nell, I completely agree. The young people can get involved. If you just think about whoever, you know, the listeners are listening now, if you think about what is it that I could do right now, there are things that you can do online to help, to actually help, whether it's through a petition or through a fundraise. You mentioned the kids in Marin, Brianna. You know, there's a little girl right now in Marin who set up a lemonade stand to fight slavery. And she said, I will sit in front of this lemonade stand until I raise $150,000. And she set up her lemonade stand and raised a few bucks. But when she went online and put it online virtually, if you just go to fundly.com/make-a-stand, you'll see Vivian Haar's virtual lemonade stand, which has raised $30,000. And she's been on the Jeff Probst show, and she's been interviewed all over the country. She has international support pouring in for an 8-year-old. Who's raising $30,000 on her way to $150,000 to stop slavery. So I completely agree that age has nothing to do with it. It's just a matter of, can I, as an individual, go make a difference? And the answer with the tools today is, yes, you can.
So we're getting to the top of the hour. The bloom is off the rose, as a bit perhaps with the online advocacy, and some skepticism remains about online fundraising. So what do you guys see coming next in the world of web and mobile-based social engagement? To let each of you have a moment, and then it'll be the end of the show. So, Nell, why don't we start with you?
Okay, that's great.
Dave, I'll end with you because you're here.
Nell, yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry, Nell. You go.
No, that's okay. I bet you're going to have much more sophisticated than me. You know, God, I am not a technology person, so I don't know what the next tools are going to be. There's always amazing tools. I think that, you know, the edge of all of this is that we're going to see that more and more people are going to be able to affect bigger and bigger changes in their communities and in the country. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be epic in terms of, you know, crowdsourcing how corporate campaigns are run, crowdsourcing how our organizations are funded. We're not going to be tied to foundations, figuring out how to hold local leaders accountable in deep, meaningful ways. I think the whole idea of national campaigns and national politics is going to change forever.
Well, Nell, I really wanted to thank you so much for that. I really wanted to get to Brianna and Dave, but that music tells me the time is up. So I know you were fantastic. Thank you so much to all of my guests for this evening. That's Dave Boyce, co-founder and CEO of Funly.com, Brianna Cato Cotter, communications director for Change.org, Nell Greensburg, the communications director for Rainforest Action Network. Thank you again. For a link to
thank
this
you.
and other City Vision shows, and to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, go check out our website. You can go to theklw.org and look for cityvisions.com in the programs and find us. For a link to this, you'll find that there. Our engineer this evening was Eric Wayne. Thank you so much, Eric. Tonight's program was produced by Victoria Thorpe. Great job, Victoria. And City Vision's senior producer is Susan Britton.